Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have a new kind of episode, as I just had a listener send us an email asking for help building a deck, and I thought it actually could be a really interesting lesson for all of us. How do we look at a new commander? How do we try to tune or refine a deck we've already worked on? How do we put into practice the different things we've learned from our various lessons from CDH and other lessons from this channel? If you like or enjoy any of the things we put out so far, including this episode, it would really help if you gave us a like, subscribe, or comment on YouTube, wherever you may be consuming this particular podcast. It really does go a long way to help us out for $0. And without further ado, why don't we get started and introduce the commander we're going to talk about, who is Lylia, the Blade Reforged. Lylia is a 2/2 legendary creature spirit warrior with haste, and whenever she attacks, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. Whenever one or more cards are put into exile from your library and or your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on Lylia. So looking at this game plan, we're probably going to want to go through. Lylia wants us to attack early and often. She provides us with a source of repeatable card advantage. And while it's impulsive kind of card draw, that's still a lot more flexibility with this mechanic in recent years than when it was first introduced. Originally, it kind of required us to cast the spell on the same turn, and Lylia is a little bit like that, but you may notice that instead she says play this card as opposed to cast this card, which means we could potentially make land drops in our post-combat main phase with Lylia. So long as we can get Lylia into play quickly, we can probably get some decent digging done and have some consistency with our game plan. There's no shortage of cards in red with impulsive draw, which will make Lylia bigger these days, so we can actually be fairly choosy with which cards we want to increase. The creator of this deck, Benjamin, writes that the goal he has with this deck is to Voltron people out, leaning on Lylia's ever-increasing power to damage opponents out of the game before, as he puts it, I die to my own deck. This means we're going to have some pretty reliable source of additional card advantage in the command zone, with a reasonably reliable win condition as well. So we don't really have the kind of advantage we need to sculpt a winning hand, so A plus B combos are probably not going to be big in this deck, but we may be able to lean into the impulsiveness of it. So we may want to consider lowering the mana curve of this deck overall. I asked Benjamin some basic questions about the deck when he proposed the idea to me, asking, is there any kind of a budget limit on cards to include? Is there any card that is really a no-go that shouldn't be removed? And what is the game plan that you really want to see when your deck is all set up or going for it? And Benjamin identified, he wants Voltron. He wants his commander to be his win condition, and while he did include a few cards that are able to kind of go over the normal combat damage step to win with spell-based damage, these are more secondary to the primary plan of Lylia beating somebody to death the good old-fashioned way. Benjamin also noted that his group is not really okay with proxies, about half of them are, half of them aren't, so for the deck to be viable in multiple pods, he would prefer if there weren't any really expensive cards in here. And I think among the suggestions that I have, it's going to be about $15 is the hard limit I set for additions to the deck. Now luckily, there are a lot of resources we can use to save some money and still have a pretty reasonable selection of cards. Let's take a look at Benjamin's list first, and there are some pretty good bones here. Obviously, we have our commander, and we have a lot of instants, sorceries, and creatures who let us exile cards incidentally. For example, we have Wild Magic Sorcerer, who is particularly good with Lylia, because each time you cascade a card and you dig one card deeper, you exile a single card. Lylia is going to get an additional +1/+1 counter for each instance of cascade. So that is a really good way to make Lylia a lot bigger, a whole lot faster. We also have cards that are kind of filling that classic role, like Magmatic Channeler, who is going to tap, discard a card, exile the top two cards of your library, choose one, you can play that card this turn. Exiling two cards in this case, because it happens as a single action, is going to let Lylia only see a single instance of a card being exiled, which means that she's only going to get an additional +1/+1 counter instead of two. Clearly, the deck is not looking to be policing the table. There's a little bit of interaction in the form of Wild Magic Surge, which is kind of a two-mana version of Chaos Warp, with the downside that the controller is always going to get the same permanent type back if they have one. Chaos Warp is obviously in the deck because it is really, really good in red, but this is not a controlling kind of red deck. This deck wants to go in and win. So the next thing I wanted to take a look at is what our mana package is looking like. Obviously, with budget restrictions and no proxies, I'm not going to recommend going out and buying Chrome Mox and Mox Diamond. There are other options we can potentially use which could be a lot cheaper, but they still could allow us to hit our game plan of getting our commander online as soon as possible. In particular, Lelia costs 2 and a red, so anything that's going to let us hit 3 mana quicker or more consistently is going to be to our benefit. Among the options we already have in the deck, we do see, for example, there is Lotus Petal, which means in theory, if we hit land drop on turn 1, play Lotus Petal, land drop on turn 2, we can then crack the Lotus Petal, tap 2 mountains, and cast Lelia a turn early, getting our game plan going sooner. I'm going to go more into details in this in a couple of moments, but you may notice there's a difference between Lotus Petal, land, turn 2 land, than land, 2 mana rock like Arcane Signet. That still means we're waiting until turn 3 before we can cast Lelia. There's a difference there, but both are certainly viable options. There are quite a few cards here that are also more big mana rocks that I think may be able to be cut. We'll get to those in a couple of moments as well. When I did a count and tried to break down the different options in the list, I also noticed a few really interesting includes, including Kedas Emberclaw Familiar, and anyone who knows this channel knows that I really do love Kedas. Kedas is a 1-1 for 1 and a red legendary creature elemental lizard with partner, and whenever a commander creature you control deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to each other opponent. So it's not combat damage, so it's not going to commander damage out the table, but if Lelia is hitting somebody for 10 or 12 points of damage, that could very quickly get you to a point where everybody's in range to be knocked out. Kedas is a nice include here. I'm also quite interested to see Burgi, God of Storytelling, in the list. 2 and a red for a 3-3 whenever you cast a spell, add red. Until the end of your turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. On the backside of Burgi is Harnfell, Horn of Bounty, which is probably the reason that we have the card in the list. For 5 mana, 4 and a red, you can discard a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library, you may play those cards this turn. So a really easy way for us to get additional exiles, and a really cool choice. Cards that directly kind of are going to work with Lelia though, if we're able to start getting lots and lots of mana, we can potentially set up a combination with Neheb the Eternal, that is 3 red-red for the 4-6 legendary creature zombie minotaur warrior with afflict 3, and at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, add red to your mana pool for each 1 life your opponents have lost this turn. If you can get that to be 5 or greater, you can start generating infinite combat steps with Aggravated Assault, assuming you're able to get Lelia through and deal a lot of damage. Now, the next thing I noted is our land count is quite low here at 30 without a lot of 0 mana rocks. This is pushing it a little bit, and when playtesting the deck, I did find there were a number of times where the deck just loses to bad top decks in the early game. I think that there is going to be a balance to strike between the Frank Karsten math of trying to get upwards of 40 or more lands in the deck versus trying to make sure that we are maximizing for those exiles late game. We may be exiling 5-10 cards off the library, and we don't want to hit a lot of lands because they're basically worthless to us after we hit our 1 land drop for the turn. So there's some interesting give and take that we have to look at. Now, when you're trying to consider how you're going to build a deck on a budget, obviously I'm an advocate for proxies, but proxies aren't viable in all situations. There is a phenomenal resource out there called the Budget Brewers Club, which is maintained by TimmyT1000, and they have done a terrific amount of work trying to make this work for anybody on any budget. If you come over and you click on the Resources tab, you can actually subscribe on Moxfield for all their various templates. For example, let's say you're like me and you're not really the best at building mana bases. You can click here, open up the Mox field, and just click on subscribe. Boom. And now you are subscribed to this package. And when you go to one of your own lists, you'll see a little lightning bolt option. And if you click on that, it'll then have the option to just click budget CEDH mana bases. And you click that, it's automatically added to the list. It is really, really cool. Shoutouts to TimmyT1000 and the entire crew at CDH Budget Brews for their awesome work and great resources for anybody who's interested. So I dug in pretty deep to this, and I made some recommendations for Benjamin on how they may be able to improve this list. So without further ado, let's take a look at my suggestions for the list. Initially, I thought the 30 number for lands was really, really low, and I still think it's a little bit low. Ultimately, though, I do recognize that this number was probably arrived at with the goal of avoiding having too much land flooding in late game. So going through the list, I identified that initially we're running four answers: Wild Magic Surge, Chaos Warp, which I already mentioned, Comet Storm, which also acts as an outlet for lots and lots of mana, and then Grim Lavamancer, who can shock opponents' creatures, or themselves if you really need to, for 2 points of damage, while also pumping Lele up, which is really nice. Originally, the deck had tons of ways to exile additional cards. I tried to cut out the ones that were the least efficient, so unfortunately that meant cutting all the Planeswalkers. Most of them were weighing in at 4 mana, and while that does curve fairly nicely into Lilia, you don't have a lot of options then to be able to cast the cards that they've exiled when you have tapped out on 4 and then attacked with Lilia. She is bigger, but you're losing access to some of that card draw. The other thing that I mentioned earlier was that I really wanted to lean into the fast ramp. And going through what Benjamin had already added to the deck, I counted 10 pieces of fast ramp that I was really happy to keep. These are cards which are going to come down before we cast Lilia, and, theoretically, should enable us to get Lilia down more quickly, or at the very least, more consistently. We have Arcane Signet, Curse of Opulence, which I'll get back to in a moment, Desperate Ritual, Jeweled Lotus, Lotus Petal, Mind Stone, Pyretic Ritual, Rite of Flame, Ruby Medallion, and Soul Ring. Overall, this is a pretty darn good selection, and Benjamin, good on you for already having a Jeweled Lotus. That definitely saves a lot of the budget of this deck from suggestions we needed to add. However, I think that getting Lelia on hand is so important that I'm suggesting a lot more additions to this. Everflowing Chalice is a great way to just have a mana rock that's going to come down on one. Or late game, if you happen to top deck it late and you've just generated a ton of mana and you need to dump it somewhere, there are worse places than putting it into an Everflowing Chalice multi-kicked multiple times. I'm also a big fan of Goldhound, who you can tap and sacrifice the turn after it's in play to get one mana of any color, a pretty quick way to get Lilia out more reliably. I also put in Impulsive Pilferer. It has to die to give you a treasure token, but that's usually not too hard to do on most boards, and it has Encore, where we pay 3 and a red and exile it from our graveyard, which would trigger Lilia. Then it would give us usually 3 copies of the card, who would then be sacrificed at the beginning of the next end step, giving us 3 more treasure. Works well with everything we're trying to do. As we're upping the creature count, I also included another ritual in the form of Infernal Pudge. 1 red mana at an additional cost to cast it, sacrifice a creature, add red to your mana pool. A 0 mana rock that actually works fairly well in this deck, which is only about $2, is Jeweled Amulet. 0 mana, tap, put a charge counter on Jeweled Amulet. You can then tap and remove that charge counter later to get the same type and color of mana that you would use to charge the amulet with later. So on turn 1, we can go Mountain, Jeweled Amulet, tap, put a red on it for later. Turn 2, play a second Mountain, tap, remove the red, tap the 2 mountains, and we can cast Lilia a turn early. Liquid Metal Torque is another easy 2-mana rock, which can give us potential upside to do easier removal in the future. Prismatic Lens is a great recommendation from the CDH Budget Brews crew. Taps for colorless, or we can filter into red if we need to. Simient Spirit Guide is way down in price. You just exile it from your hand to add red to your mana pool. It gives you more opening hands where you can cast Lilia early. Skirk Prospector works well with our Impulsive Pilferer and itself. Sacrifice a Goblin, add red. Not always what you really want to do, but we're going to come back to this one as well because it could do a lot of powerful things in the right circumstances. Finally, Thought Vessel is another 2-mana rock. You have no maximum hand size. I don't think that's going to be particularly relevant in this deck. This can probably be changed out for any other 2-mana rock you really want. The slow ramp section I cut down on significantly. I kept a couple of them in here, whether because they do enable some powerful combos like Neheb the Eternal. Grinning Ignis potentially goes infinite in a number of different ways with Burgi, God of Storytelling, or Ruby Medallion, or a combination of the two, and you can potentially generate infinite red and colorless mana. Mana Geyser is just a great way to get a ton of mana, potentially during a storm turn, which again we'll get to in a moment. I suggested adding a pair of 3-mana rocks, which are actually very highly recommended by the folks at CEDH Budget Brews. Glittering Stockpile is 2 and a red for a treasure. That taps for red, put a stash counter on it. Tap, sacrifice it, add X of any one color, where X is the number of stash counters on Glittering Stockpile. It is a 3-mana rock, which we can use right away. Doesn't get us our commander sooner, but we can use it repeatedly and eventually tap it for a ton of mana. I also recommended Cursed Mirror. It is a really cheap mana rock at the moment. 2 and a red, tap, add red. It can enter the battlefield as a copy of another creature. It has haste until end of turn, so you can still tap it for red on the turn you cast it. So you could potentially just make it the best creature on the battlefield. But I saw a lot of powerful options with this when you could use it to copy something like Runaway Steamkin. 1 and a red for a 1-1 elemental. Whenever you cast a red spell, which most of the deck is, Runaway Steamkin has fewer than 3 +1/+1 counters on it. Put a +1/+1 counter on Runaway Steamkin. Then remove 3 +1/+1 counters, add red, red, red. This is a really powerful card to include in the list, which Benjamin had already noted when he was building the deck. It is potentially a really cool other way for us to go for a win, and Benjamin had included a lot of potential storm payoffs. I already mentioned Burgi, but we were also running Galvanic Relay, 2 and a red for a sorcery with storm. Exile the top card of your library. During your next turn, you may play that card. So this is a potential storm payoff. This also is going to make Lilia trigger once for each copy of Galvanic Relay we make. We also have Passionate Archaeologist, which is kind of like an Aristocrat's effect, which is going to act as a pinger. Commander creatures you own with this background have, whenever you cast a spell from exile, this creature deals damage equal to that spell's mana value to target opponent. Another potential way to blast opponents down. We had also already seen Past in Flames included in this list. This is an all-star for 4 mana. Each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost, and then it also happens to have flashback for 4 and a red. So I think that leaning into the storm payoff could potentially be quite powerful. And I mentioned I was going to come back to the Skurk Prospector, who's going to let us turn goblins into red mana. And one potential way to pay that off is through a storm payoff with Empty the Warrens. 3 and a red for a sorcery, only costs 14 cents. Create 2/1/1 red goblin creature tokens, and of course it has storm. Another powerful storm option in Commander is Stormkiln Artisan. 3 and a red for a 2/2 creature dwarf shaman. With it gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control, and sure enough, Magecraft, whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, create a treasure token. So when you storm off, you're going to copy those storm copies, and Stormkiln Artisan is going to give you a treasure for each one of them. I'd considered putting Grapeshot in here too, and it still may be correct to do so, maybe over the Comet Storm, but I'm not 100% sure. Finally, I included Underworld Breach. This does a lot of what the deck wants, even if it's not as powerful in CDH, where you're going to see it be able to essentially win the game on the spot with Wheels, with Grinding Station, with Brain Freeze, and Lion's Eye Diamond. You can still get multiple exiles off of this, make Lilia bigger, and potentially cast storm spells multiple times, or just cast good spells multiple times, and do a lot of powerful things. With Empty the Warrens in particular, we're going to make a bunch of goblins, which we can then sacrifice to Skurk Prospector to make a bunch of mana. Other ways that we can get additional mana include Professional Facebreaker, who does a lot of good things this deck wants to do. 2 and a red for a 2/3 with Menace. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, create a treasure token. Sacrifice a treasure. Exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. So it is another way to exile more cards to potentially get more power and toughness on Lilia, see more cards in general. And if you're just stuck on not getting enough cards, if you're in a good shape, if you just need more mana, Professional Facebreaker gets us there as well. In terms of ways to help Lilia do more damage and potentially end the game, even if things get kind of gummed up on the ground, Benjamin had already been running Jeska Thrice Reborn, who is a great option. 2 and a red for a 0 loyalty planeswalker. She enters the battlefield with a loyalty counter on it for each time you cast your commander from the command zone this game. Maybe once, maybe twice, but importantly, her 0 ability is choose target creature. Until next turn, if that creature would deal combat damage to one or more of your opponents, it deals triple that damage to that player instead. So that can very easily get somebody into range to be one-shotted by Lilia. We also saw Soul's Fire, 2 and a red for an instant, target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to any target. This is the cheapest kind of bite that could also go to a player's face as opposed to just at a creature. To help out with that, I included a 4-mana version, Gravitic Punch, which only costs 7 cents, 3 and a red for a sorcery, target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to target player. We lose the option to use it on a creature as a form of removal, but it also has Jumpstart, with which you may cast this card from your graveyard by discarding a card in addition to paying its other costs. So if we knock another player out, we then have the option to cast Gravitic Punch again from the graveyard. Now, one thing to note with Flashback and also with Jumpstart, you are going to be exiling the cards from the stack after they finish resolving, not exiling them from the graveyard. So unfortunately, they're not going to trigger Lelia, but they're still good enough payoffs that they're probably worth including. I also suggested adding Teemer Battle Rage. 1 and a red, target creature gains double strike until end of turn, and that creature also gains trample until end of turn if you have a creature with power 4 or greater. This is a great way to just come out of nowhere and eliminate somebody. Maybe a cut if your group is a little bit less into that cutthroaty kind of thing, but from what Benjamin described, that seems to be exactly what his group is in for. Now, I mentioned before that we kind of have to look at this as how quickly can we get our commander in play. Turn 1, our rolling reel option is a Jeweled Lotus. That's fine. Once in a while, you're going to win the lottery, get a turn 1 Lelia, and just go to town. That's awesome. Turn 2, we have a number of different options. We have 2 different rituals. Again, assuming we're able to hit a land drop on turns 1 and 2. Desperate Ritual and Pyretic Ritual are basically the same spell. 1 and a red, add red, red, red to your mana pool. Great, they're pretty cool. Rite of Flame is a little bit cheaper, a single red mana, add red red, then add red for each card named Rite of Flame in your graveyard, which is obviously going to be 0. Good old classic Soul Ring is going to get us there as well, and I've already explained how both Jeweled Amulet and Lotus Petal are going to potentially help too. Curse of Opulence is a little bit more tricky. You're only really going to make this a turn to Lelia if it is going to be at a table where you know somebody else is going to be attacking. If you can reliably say that, yes, player 2 is definitely going to attack player 3 for me, they're playing the aggro deck, great, throw it out there. Otherwise, I think this may be a cut, but I'm just not quite sure what I would replace it with. Finally, the turn 3 Lelia. I talked about all those different 2-mana rocks, of which I am including Everflowing Chalice as one of them. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was add a little bit more in the way of reliability to the deck. So there's already a lot of good impulsive draw. Sometimes it's going to be sad when you exile a card you were really, really looking for in order to try to just make Lelia more bigger. I added a couple of different answers in here. A Braid is either 3 damage or destroy target artifact at instant speed. Cathartic Pyre is either 3 damage to a creature or planeswalker. And then a 2-card loot effect. And Vandal Blast is just a great way to destroy lots of artifacts. If we're already on Liquid Metal Torque anyway, why not include it? Gamble was already in the list, and I suggested adding Dragon's Rage Channeler. This is a fairly loose include, but it is a really good card. For a single red mana, a 1-1 with whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Surveil 1. This could be a very good way to fuel Underworld Breach, or to set up for a big Past in Flames later on. And it does become a better attacker with +2/+2 flying and attacks each combat if able, as long as there are 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard. I suggested adding a few additional lands to the deck. I only call these snow-covered mountains just because otherwise Moxfield doesn't let me have a separate list of the mountains that I suggested adding, but I think having a good way to exile graveyards outside of CEDH on a land is worth the slot, and Scavenger Grounds is going to exile all cards from all graveyards, which will, incidentally, make Lelia 1 point bigger. Crystal Vein is a phenomenal budget include. Taps for colorless, or tap and sacrifice it to add colorless to your mana pool. That is another way you can potentially get a turn to Lelia. Shatter Skull Smashing is one of the more expensive additions I recommended, but the fact that it can be a removal spell on the front side or on the back, you shock yourself for 3 points of damage to have what is basically a non-typed mountain come into play untapped. And that's about it. Now, the real hard part, obviously, when you're helping somebody build a deck or you're trying to make your own suggestions, you got to talk about what to cut. and I made a recommendation for lots of cuts with this. Ultimately, I didn't feel, for example, Mox Amber, although it is a zero mana rock, is not likely to help you get Lelia out more quickly. It could be potentially good in a storm turn, but I don't feel that is really worth it. I also removed some of the classic Voltron cards of Lightning Greave, Swiftfoot Boots, Whisper Silk Cloak. If you really find your commander is being removed over and over and over, usually I prefer some type of counter magic to protect my commander, but these are still good potential options, and I would say Whisper Silk Cloak is probably the one I would include first, as that is going to make Lelia both have Shroud and Unblockable. Swiftfoot Boots and Lightning Greaves are both more efficient ways to make her protected, but it's also going to be more difficult to be able to actually get through, and I think that's going to be the big problem this deck is going to run into. I cut a number of cards that are just going to be exiles. Act on Impulse was the original version of this. That was probably the least efficient version. Orcish Librarian is a really cool card, and I'm always a sucker for Phil Foglio art, but the fact that you're randomly exiling four cards, tapping a creature for a red mana to get this effect, I think there were just better options. Outpost Siege is one of my favorite enchantments in red, but at four mana, again, just a little bit expensive and making you wait until your next upkeep to get the benefits from it, I didn't feel it was worth it. I also recommended getting rid of the cards that incidentally cast from exile. Eternal Scourge and Squee the Immortal are staples in food chain lists that can run them because they can be cast again from exile, but that's not really what this deck is looking to do. I think that they're not worth the slot, even if you can occasionally just get a little bit of additional combo out of it. I also suggested cutting Basalt Monolith and Rings of Brighthearth. We don't have a great outlet for infinite mana, and it doesn't produce infinite colored mana, which is what we're going to get choked on anyway. So in that case, I don't think Basalt Monolith is worth including by itself, and as a result, I've got to suggest cutting Rings of Brighthearth as well. Among the lands, I really don't like including Evolving Wilds and Terramorphic Expanse in a monocolored deck. Even at budget, I think that there are many better things you could be doing with your land drop for turn than getting a basic land into play tap. Myriad Landscape, I may include in a casual deck, particularly a budget deck, if I'm planning to go really long with the deck, but I don't think that's what Lelia wants to do. Overall, this is a really cool deck, and I have seen some really nutty turn 6, turn 7 storm turns with this deck, where I have even seen exiling your entire deck with Galvanic Relay, make Lelia gargantuan. At that point, I think she was a 47-47, and then just have her go around the table, Gravatic Punching everybody off, and it is really, really cool. Benjamin, hats off to you for making a really interesting deck, and thanks for asking for suggestions. I hope everybody else enjoyed this episode too. If anybody else has experience with this commander, which I obviously do not, please leave some down in the comments. That could be a big help to Benjamin, a big help to me, and anyone else who's potentially interested in this commander. If you enjoyed this or any of our other episodes, don't forget to give a like, subscribe on YouTube or whatever other app you're using to consume the content. If you want to reach us on Twitter, we are at GemstoneMineMTG. You can send us an email at gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on YouTube where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.